psychiatry has pointed out the need for that. We all have it in one way or another. Sometimes, you know, that's a reason for marriage. Sometimes it's children. Sometimes, you know, we can all lay it off on somebody. Because when you take a good, hard, long look at yourself in the mirror and you say, it's me, so that is the most uncomfortable, difficult task that human beings face. And in a national entity where you have politicians and others who have devious motives and who strive for all sorts of goals that are not necessarily in the interest of the country, it's not hard to imagine the necessity for scapegoats. That's why, again, throughout Jewish history, Jews have always prayed for the prosperity and good times of the country that they live in. It's not merely a matter of patriotism, which it is, and not only a matter of showing appreciation, which it is, but it's also a matter of survival. In good times, the necessity for a scapegoat diminishes. It goes below the surface. In bad times, God forbid, so then the scapegoat has to be real. Then he appears. Then the necessity is here. And that's why we see, even in the United States, in the history of the United States, that in times of trouble, and many times, certain movements arise which are inimical to Jews or other minorities. They usually gain adherence and strength in times of trouble. So the second role that the Jews fulfilled was the fact that they were scapegoats. The third role that the Jews fulfilled, and with that we'll conclude tonight, was that the Jews could be used as scholars in an age that forbade scholarship, but rather encouraged scholasticism. There is a difference. The church rarely was open to new ideas. Churchill once described Russia as being dragged, kicking and screaming, into the 20th century. To a great extent, that was true of the medieval church. Anything new was threatening, dangerous. And the truth of the matter was that it ended up being threatening and dangerous to the church. The scientific progress of the Renaissance is probably what undid the church more than anything else. The church's real enemy were not the Muslims and certainly not the Jews. It was Galileo and Copernicus and the others who destroyed not the theology of the church, but who destroyed the physical underpinnings that the church had incorporated as dogma. Now, man is a curious creature. He is never satisfied. He is never satisfied with what he has, and he's never satisfied with what he knows. That is man's greatest quality, and that is his worst quality. Because if we were satisfied, then Henry Ford's Model T would be sufficient, right? We wouldn't need all of the electronic gadgetry that we have today. Everything goes that way. Whatever we have, if we make it obsolete, we want to have something new, something different. Now, that's not only true in the physical world, that's true in the mental world, in the intellectual world. There are very few things that last forever. The Newtonian theories of physics have given way to Einstein and his theories. But all of the research and all of the pressure is to find a new system of physics that will do away with even Einstein's ideas and theories. We always want something new. We always want something different. And since the church had the right to brand the person, that's a bad pun, but to brand the person, the